I think what Merle had to say this morning fit pretty good. Thinking about something after you make a commitment is not a good idea. But, yeah, it's kind of strange for me standing up here talking about going back to school. Just 3 years ago, I was, that applied to me. But I guess I'm older than I realize or something. I don't know. But one of the things that I thought about as I was thinking about going back to school, I thought a lot more about the older age group in going back to school. So this is going to be geared more towards like middle school, high school, and I know we have a couple college students as well. So for you younger kids, there's some things that you can. I think there's some things in what I have to say that you can take from this as well, but it's going to be geared more towards the older ones. The first thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit is just the aspect of the school work, and that's probably the least popular part about going back to school. That's the part everybody dreads, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but one of the things that I want you guys to think about as you go back is to learn as much as you can. You don't, I know you hear this all the time, but really put yourselves into it. One of the things that I thought about as I was looking back over my school years was one of the regrets that I had was not putting myself into school as much as I could have, especially my senior year. Some of you are seniors, and it's easy to get senioritis, and I think I had that the first day going back to school that year. And but it really is important to put yourselves into it, do the best you can. And we can get lost on grades pretty quick, but I don't really care if you're an A student or if you're a C student. If you do your best, you should be proud of the grade that you get. The letter grades are not the most important thing. I had a friend, a really close friend in high school, who really struggled with schoolwork, did not do real well with the academics. And I was sort of the opposite, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn there, but just one of the things that I found was that we're all good at something. For me, like, I could pretty much talk circles around him when it came to math or something like that, but when it came to out in the shop at school, he was way further ahead than I was. And so, yeah, we're all good at something. For those of you that are A students, don't look down on the ones that struggle with school, because I guarantee there's something that they're a lot better at than you are. And for those of you that struggle in school, find those things that you are good at and maximize your strengths. Don't give up on your weaknesses, but really maximize your strengths. These years, one of the things that I've found is that the academics and these years of finding your strengths and learning to work around some of your weaknesses can really shape your life and also your career path. As you think about moving past your school years and into the work field, getting a job and stuff like that, the things that you learn in school can really shape where you go with the rest of your life. Now I'm done talking about the academics, so you can tune back in now. One of the most important aspects of school, in my opinion, and hopefully the parents won't get too upset with me here, but I think that the whole area of the social aspect of school is extremely important. And I think that in some ways it can be even more important than the academics of school. We've all had people preach at us about peer pressure. I just want to make a couple comments on that. Peer pressure is really big. All of us that have been through school or are in school know all about it. And it's really easy to just try to follow the in crowd and try to be cool and do the things that we think will gain us acceptance. But one of the things that I learned, especially in high school, in some of my older years, was that following the in crowd and trying to be someone you're not is really empty. There's really nothing there. And it's really not worth it. This is kind of profound, I guess, but I think we lose sight of it pretty easily. You can only be one person. God created you to be who you are, and whether you like it or not, that's the person you're stuck with. So just learn to be comfortable with who you are. God made you the way that he made you for a reason, and he doesn't make mistakes. So learn to accept the person that you are and even enjoy the person that you are. That was one of the things that I struggled with in my school years. And as I look back on some of those times, we spend so much time following, the people we call the in crowd or whoever, the cool people, and we want to be like them. But it's been my observation that those people are not any better off than you and I are. And what I have observed is that their focus is more on trying to remain in the in crowd and trying to stay the cool people, and their focus is more on themselves than on other people and on God, which is what we were really created for. And their lives are often pretty empty. So I just want to encourage you in that. But then there is the positive side of peer pressure and the positive side of the social aspect. We can pour into our friends' lives, into our the people we come in contact with at school, in a way that adults, that our parents, and a lot of other people can't. And so there's a huge opportunity there to really pour ourselves into the people that we come in contact with at school every day. We can encourage and support them in a lot of ways. We can encourage them to follow their dreams. We can, and also in following God's call. When I was in high school, I had some friends that really stood up for me and encouraged me in a lot of ways and really drew me closer to God. And so I want to encourage you guys to do that as you have the opportunity. Make the most of your school years. They don't last, obviously. But as I look back on my school years, one of the things that I wish that I could change, especially when I was a senior, I was ready to just be done with the whole school thing. I wanted to move past it, get a job, and get on with life. But I found that I missed some things in that year because my focus was elsewhere. Just focus on having the best possible years that you can and make the most of that time because it doesn't last. But your friendships do. So a lot of my classmates have moved on. I think there's three or four school teachers from my class. One of my classmates is in Grenada teaching. One of my classmates is in Montana. One is in Colorado with New Horizons. So the times that you have, this is not meant to be discouraging, but the times that you have are rapidly closing. My senior year, Mr. Lapp, who is the principal at Faith where I went, gave us this verse as our theme verse for the year, Psalms 90, verse 12. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. One of the ways that we often look at that verse is that our days on earth are short, but as I was thinking about this, our days in school really are short. And our time to influence our friends and to learn and to make an impact where we're at run out. Another thing that I want you guys to think about is school can be very much of a mission field. I went to a private school all my life, Mennonite school, from kindergarten through 12th grade. And one of the things that I missed was that school can be a mission field. When you're going to school with others like you that were raised in Christian homes and know the Bible and stuff, I tend to miss the fact that there are still hurting people. There are still people in those schools that need the love of Jesus and need the love of other people to pull them through. And I just want to wrap up here with a story. I'm just going to tell the story and then I'll make a couple comments at the end. There was an individual who, in their high school, well, the end of their middle school years and into their high school years, was really struggling personally, and they were facing some tough things at home and facing a lot of discouragement, as is often the case for young teens. They were struggling a lot with the question of, you know, why am I here? Is my life worth anything? And, you know, what is my purpose? What's the point of life? And this person was struggling a lot with depression, even some temptation of suicide and some things like that. But they were in a class in high school that they had a lot of friends that really cared. about this individual and really pulled for that person. These friends were true Christians and cared a lot for that person, and it was their friendship and their love that eventually pulled that person up, gave them new purpose and new meaning in life. And those people made a huge impact and really changed that person's life. Today, that person loves to try to help others who are dealing with the same things that they were when they were a younger teen. That story is true. That's a person that I know, and it happened. That person graduated from Faith Night High School. So if there is one person out there like that, there are more. And so I guess what I really want you guys to think about, what I want to call you to, is to look out for those people as you interact with the people you go to school with. You can make a huge impact on a person's life, and you have the ability to change a person's life for the better. And so I just want to challenge you to do that.
Thank you, Austin, for that. And for those of you that are going back to school, how many of you think that going to school is important for you? Let me see your hands. I see a couple. Yeah. Because as I've been into other countries and I've run into people, actually even in the prison, when I worked in the prison system, I ran into some people that couldn't read. And can you imagine what life would be like if you couldn't read anything? And you couldn't even write your name. The one guy in the prison system, he just had a little signature thing that he would do. You couldn't tell what it said, but it was his like little signature sort of. It's the only thing he knew, how to write his name. So what would your life be like? What would our lives be like if we couldn't read and write and we had no way of communicating other than just being able to talk to someone? So school is very important, and we as a church want to bless all of you that are going to school. And maybe you're not going to school as a student, but you're going as a teacher in some way, or you're helping teaching. So we want to have just a prayer of blessing on you. So everyone that's going to school in some form, even college or as a teacher, or if you're homeschooling, mom or dad or whatever, we would like all of you to stand. Everyone that's involved in the school year. That should be quite a few people here. Yeah, a lot of people. Some going back to college in some way, taking courses, some involved in teaching. Yeah, we have a number of teachers here, moms and dads and all kinds of things. So we just want to have a prayer of blessing on you. Just as a way, just praying that this year will be a good year for you and you'll be able to learn well and that it would go well. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the opportunity we have here in America to enjoy education. And Lord, I know many of us don't enjoy education very much because of the work involved. But it's an opportunity for us. It's a blessing, actually, that you have given us. And we don't want to take that for granted, Lord. We want to use it to the best of our ability. And so I pray for all of the children here that are going back to school this year, for the older ones that are maybe going into college, for the ones that are teaching as well, that are investing their lives in pouring education into the lives of younger people. Father, I just, this morning, we just pause for a moment, and we want to pray a prayer of blessing on each one that's standing here this morning. Lord, as they study, as they learn, and as they teach, whatever they're involved in, Father, I pray that we, in a new way, could get a hold of what a great opportunity it is for us here, and that we could study to show ourselves approved unto God. Lord, that we would apply ourselves in this coming year. And so I pray a blessing on each one. I pray that you would just strengthen them every day. Give them a vision for their schooling, and give them a passion for it as well. And I pray a blessing on them today. In Jesus' name, amen. You can be seated. Merlin is going to speak some to us as adults. And so, Merlin, I'll give the time to you.
Well, greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here. You know, we're gathered together this morning to worship. We're gathered together to encourage each other. And I don't know why you've chosen to attend this church here this morning, whether you're a member, a regular attendee, or a visitor, but you're here. And you're in a conservative Anabaptist church. You know, we all come from various backgrounds. Some of us don't even come from what we would consider an Anabaptist background. But we're here as Christians. We're here as fellow believers. I've been on a journey of discovery. And this morning, I'm asking you to join me in this journey. There's two questions I want you to consider here this morning. And the first question is my life, is your life fruitful? And the second question I want you to consider is, as you consider your lifestyle in 2013, is it a reflection of the world around us, or is it a reflection of Jesus Christ? I've been fascinated recently with the parables of Jesus. And there's a lot of truth that Jesus packs into his parables. And sometimes the smaller the parable, the more intense it is. And there's one very small parable that I'd like to spend some time on this morning, and that's in Luke chapter 13. So if you can turn there. Luke chapter 13, it's verses 6 through 9. Four verses. The reading from Luke chapter 13, 6 through 9. And he spake this parable. A certain man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit thereon, and found none. And he said unto the vine dresser, Behold, these 3 years I come seeking fruit on this fig tree, and find none. Cut it down. Why doth it also cumber the ground? And he answering saith unto him, Lord, let it alone for this year also, till I shall dig about it and dung it. And if it bear fruit thenceforth, well, but if not, thou shalt cut it down.
Four verses, and in a sense, Jesus kind of left us hanging, because we don't even know what happened to this fig tree. But I'd like to unpack these four verses here this morning. And there's a lot in these verses for me. And the amazing thing about this parable is, when I started reading over it here about 10 days ago, A lot of what I'm going to share this morning, I wasn't even thinking 10 days ago. And the more I read it and meditated on it and prayed about it, the more it just kind of opened up. And there's a lot in here. I'm going to use some imagination. So bear with me in my imagination. But going back to verse 6, it says, "And he." So who's he? That's Jesus. And these are Jesus' words. So when Jesus is speaking, we better pay attention. He says, "A certain man," and we have no idea who the certain man is, but I like to picture this morning, this certain man is God. So God had a fig tree planted in his vineyard. Now, what's so important about a fig tree? I like trees, and I would love to have a fig tree in my yard right now. It grows about 30 feet tall, and it's an awesome shade tree. And I would love a shade tree in my house. The other thing about a fig tree is it tolerates drought. So it can go through long periods of time with no rain. And it survives and does very well. I already mentioned it's a good source of shade. A fig tree will most times give two crops a year. But it's not uncommon that they'll even harvest from it four times in a given year. So a fig tree can be very fruitful. So when you think about a big shade tree, and God planted it in a vineyard. Now, I don't have a vineyard, but think about trying to grow a garden in the same place as a tree. Why did God plant the fig tree in his vineyard? A man plants a vineyard where there's fertile soil. He plants a vineyard where there's really good soil. And the fig trees tend to grow out in the wild or out where there's not other things around it. A fig tree can, Israel, in those areas, a fig tree can be kind of an oasis, a place where wild animals come to, or if you're a traveler and you see a fig tree out ahead, you know that's a good place to go. But God didn't plant the fig tree out in the wild. He picked his best place to plant his fig tree, in his vineyard. I don't know how long it takes for a fig tree to get mature, and I don't know how big this fig tree was that Jesus was talking about, but I'm going to assume it was full grown. And I'm going to assume that it took at least 20 or 30 years for the fig tree to grow. So think about it. 20 or 30 years ago, God planted this fig tree. And he came expecting a harvest. Because he planted this tree right where he was expecting the biggest harvest. And what did he find? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Except for a bunch of leaves. I'd be really frustrated if I were God. Now, Jesus was speaking this parable to people. He wasn't speaking this parable to trees. He wasn't even speaking the parable to rocks or towns or villages. He was speaking to people. And I'd like to think that Jesus, in his infinite wisdom, was speaking right into the hearts of his audience and was, maybe he was saying that you're the fig tree, that I'm the fig tree. Maybe God was saying that I planted you in a perfect environment. I planted you in this church, in this community. And what are you doing? You just look good, and that's it. So verse 7. So God said to his vine dresser, and I might be going out on a limb here, but I'd like to think that this vine dresser was Jesus. So God said to Jesus, "I've come here for 3 years expecting fruit, and there's no fruit. Cut it down. Get rid of it. I'm sick of it." And Jesus, in all his mercy, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Then at the end of verse 7, why this thing is growing in this good ground? We're wasting this ground. We're wasting this environment. Get rid of it. And Jesus, in all his mercy, said, God, just give me one more year. All I want is one more year. And I'll dig around it. And the picture I get of digging around it is hard times. Now picture with me if you're the fig tree and God and Jesus is talking to God and begging for one more year. And he's begging for what? He's begging for hard times. But then he also says he'll dung it. He'll fertilize it. And the picture I get there is good times. So I don't know where you're at in your life today. But I see a picture of Jesus giving you hard times, but also giving you good times. You know, the fig trees also meant something to the Jews, a lot more than they do to us. In Deuteronomy 8:8, it says, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and of honey. And that was describing the land of Israel. So the fig trees was a very important part of their life. In 1 Kings 4:25, and Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. Giving the picture that a man that had something had a vine and had a fig tree, had a vineyard and a fig tree. 2 Kings 18:31 says, hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and then eat ye every man of his own vine, and every one of his own fig tree, and drink ye every one the waters of a cistern. So Jesus was using a very important part of the Jewish people's lives. He was digging right into their very livelihood. So Jesus fertilized the tree. He gave the tree some hard times. And he's saying, give me one more year, and if it bears fruit, great. But if it doesn't, then you may cut it down. And then the parable ends. Kind of leaves me hanging. But the more I thought about it, I'm actually glad the parable stops right where it stops. Because it gives me hope. Because if I'm that fig tree, then I have then I have hope for another day. I have hope to get my life in order. I have one more chance to bear fruit before I'm cut down. So back to my two questions. Is your life fruitful? I have this picture in my mind of God moving up and down these rows here in this church this morning. And with this larger group, most likely he's finding some of you extremely fruitful. And there's also a possibility that he's coming to some of you and saying, wow, you're really barren. But my picture doesn't stop there. Instead, I see Jesus pleading on your behalf and on my behalf for more time. I see him digging and I see him fertilizing. I see him giving me one more chance. The second question for this morning, is your lifestyle a reflection of the world or of Jesus Christ? And here I'll be really honest and expose my feelings. And I don't know, maybe there's some here that will sympathize with me. Maybe you understand. and maybe you won't understand. And if you don't understand, I just ask you to give me the grace to work through it. Because like I said, I'm on a journey, and I'm taking you with me on this journey this morning. But when I think about my lifestyle being a reflection of the world of Jesus Christ, one of the first things I think about is, who am I? Well, I'm a Mennonite. Sometimes I'm glad to be a Mennonite. And there's sometimes where I'm really embarrassed to be a Mennonite. And I don't know why, but it seems like the last couple years, there's been more times where I've been embarrassed to be a Mennonite. And the most recent time was when we were in Belize. We were within a couple miles of the Mennonite community. And the Mennonites that we saw were what we would call horse and buggy Mennonites. And what embarrassed me about them was their ungodliness. And yet, they're associated with the same group of people that I'm associated with. I don't know why they're at where they're at and why we're at where we're at. And I haven't thought through this long enough to maybe argue this point, but I wonder if one of the main reasons why sometimes I'm embarrassed about being associated with the Mennonites is... And when I say Mennonites, I'm also including the Amish. In other words, the conservative Anabaptist. And I'm wondering if one of the reasons why sometimes I'm not embarrassed to be a part of them is how they, or maybe I should say how I, handle my money. You know, Jesus has a lot of harsh words. I could spend the rest of the morning just reading verses about and Jesus railing on people that are rich and people that have lots of money. You know, in the country we live in, one of the things that is I hear a lot is people disturbed at the fact that how the nation has drifted so far and how we as a nation have went so far from what they say are the principles of our founding fathers. And I was thinking about that recently, and the thought came into my mind, well, when you think of the Mennonites, what are the principles of our founding fathers? What are they like? And have we possibly strayed so far from the founding principles of our Anabaptist fathers that sometimes it's an embarrassment to be with the Mennonites? So what are the founding principles? I don't have five founding principles, but there's three men that I want to just talk about briefly that when you read over their life, I think you get a small snapshot of, or get an idea of what the founding principles might have been like. The first one is Felix Mons. He lived about 30 years. He was about 30 years old when he died. He was a very educated man. And there were three things that he questioned about the church he was a part of, and it was infant baptism, church and state, and mass. But that man was passionate. In my research, no, I'm getting mixed up with someone else. We've probably all heard about Dirk Williams. how the guy was in prison and escaped from prison, and in going across the ice, he made it across, but the guard that was going after him fell in, and the guard was crying for help. And so Dirk goes back and rescues the poor guy. Now think about it. They say that probably the reason why Dirk didn't fall in was because he was so thin. He lost so much weight in prison. So you're in an awful place for, let's say, I don't know how many months, but let's say 3 months. And you're finally getting free. And the guard is chasing after you. If that were me, I'd still be running. I would have never come back. But Dirk was so concerned about the salvation of everyone, even the guy who was going after him, that he went back and rescued him. And then, of course, he was put back in jail again and died a martyr's death. He was burned at the stake. Conrad Grebel, he's considered the father of the Anabaptist. He was the same age as Felix Mond. He lives about the same amount of time. He became a Christian minister when he was 25 years old. I have it here, but he went to a number of different universities, and he must have been a party kid, because it said he went to a bunch of different universities and didn't graduate from any of them. Oh yeah, 6 years in 3 different universities, but without finishing his education or receiving a degree. 4 years before his death is when they believe that he experienced a conversion, when he became a Christian. And his life showed a dramatic change. He was in the Reformed Church, in Zwingli's church, and after lots of Bible study, realized that church wasn't very biblical, and that's when the Anabaptist movement started. But he lived basically about a year and a half as an Anabaptist preacher. And yet, the effect of his life is still showing up today. You know, where we come from is very, very important. And if you don't believe it's important, then my question to you is, then why is it so important to break generational sins? So I think it's important to look at where we've come from. And I think it's important to go the whole way back to where we as a people came from. And when I look at the lives of these men, and I could spend a lot more time on them, but there's 3 things that stand out to me about these men. And number one is they were passionate about Jesus and about bringing the gospel to every single person, even their captors. The other thing that stands out to me is they were educated, but yet they were still willing to study the Bible. You know, it seems that the more educated we get sometimes, the less we need God. Yet these men didn't find it that way. And the other thing is, can you imagine being so passionate about Jesus and about his teachings that all you need is a year and a half to leave a huge impact in the world around you? And so I guess my question here this morning, the question that I'm asking myself is, first of all, is my life fruitful? But secondly, and most importantly, is my lifestyle, the way I live my life, is a reflection of the world or of Jesus Christ? And you know, I can't change you. I can change me.
And I've taken you on a small journey. I've given you a small picture of where I'm at. And my prayer is that this little journey sparked a journey in your own life to think about where you're going and who we are. So after you read Luke 13, verses 6 through 9, and consider the lives of our Anabaptist forefathers, is your life fruitful and a reflection of Jesus Christ?